You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7 right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. My show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and I am grateful to have Ellen Little here with me co-hosting, and we've got all our mics working. I'm so excited.
Yay. So we can have 10 people in here now.
The studio is absolutely beautiful. Sometimes I wish, actually we should take a picture, take a video of our studio sometime, because it's really state of the art.
Yes.
And we have Pastor Paul running our board, which is awesome. In studio today, we're very happy to have Erica McKinney. And Erica is here. She's going to be talking later about the Epilepsy Foundation. And she's got a really fancy title, Ellen. Her title is the Advancement and Education Specialist for the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida. So welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. Try saying that three times fast.
I don't know if I can.
Does it fit on a card?
No, actually, it does, but not on my name tag anymore.
Right. Exactly.
And what a great topic to talk about, the Epilepsy Foundation, because, you know, so many people want to help with various causes in our country, in our town, and you're here in Brevard. And they don't know where to go for resources, and they don't know what services are offered, and there are a lot.
Yes.
So on our fun, unscripted, educational show, we are going to empower our listeners so that if they have someone with epilepsy or they know someone, they would know what to do.
Right.
So that's what Erica is going to be talking about the second segment. How long did it take you to drive in from New Smyrna Beach?
It was about 50 minutes.
Not bad.
No, not too bad.
Yeah. And you probably listened to radio on the way up or music.
Absolutely.
Or something. Yeah. I kind of like driving.
I love driving. At my other job, they used to call me the road warrior. I would much rather get in a car than get in a plane.
Yes. A lot of people, I like when it's not raining and the sun is shining and you're driving. Mm-hmm. Now, I know we're going to have a special guest calling in from Los Angeles, California. Her name is Mona Shake. And I know Ellen just talked to her and I did. She is... She's a comedian. She's a producer of the Minority Reports with a Z in the end. She was born in Pakistan. She came to the United States when she was 15, and she lived in New Jersey. And, you know, a lot of us know people who are Indian or Pakistani or Persian foreigners. They tend to have their children go into medicine, law, engineering, and it's quite, it's not common to have an Indian girl decide to go into comedy and make be successful at it.
That's right.
So I think it's wonderful. You know, that's what we want. You know, we always talk about assimilating into the American culture, and we always talk about stepping out of our box. And I admire her because she did. She followed her dreams.
And her website is actually featuring her interview today,
right,
on the show. So her Twitter handle is at Mona's Comedy, M-O-N-A-S Comedy, and her website is Mona Shake, which is spelled SHAIKH.com.
Right, and she's got thick skin, because, you know, I mean, a lot of people who try to branch out and do something different, they get a lot of pushback from their families, and so that's why we became friends on Facebook, and I asked her, I've been trying to book her for a very long time to call in on our show, and she's been busy, so I gave her the number, and Ellen gave her the number, and we'll talk to her. But before she calls in, Ellen, did you get a chance to watch the Oscars last night?
I did.
Everybody looks so glamorous. And I tell you, yeah. I have always liked Ashley Judd.
Yes.
When I went to the Women's March in Washington, D.C., I heard her speak about empowerment of women and the Me Too movement. I mean, it wasn't as strong then. They were just talking about women's issues. And I was amazed she had said this beautiful poetry, a poem. And then last night, they asked her on the red carpet to speak a little bit about what she was going to be presenting and saying something. And she talked about the Me Too movement. And it does make you feel great that women are standing up, and men too, because who haven't been affected?
That's right.
You know, in every country, in every place, people have been affected in some way.
That's right.
And so it's nice to see that. I feel kind of safe in a way because these things are being brought out into the light.
It's the only way we can fix things.
Right. So I said, and then what else happened? Then I went to Fort Lauderdale.
I was just going to say, I can't believe you didn't bring up Joe Kennedy.
You know, I've always enjoyed American politics. I remember when we were children, my father used to sell newspapers in our store, and he insisted that we read the newspapers. And so we read about the Kennedys, and we read about American politics, and I've always admired the freedom, the democracy that America has. It's not perfect, but it's here, right? And so I met Joe Kennedy III, and I was so impressed.
Yes.
I actually touched his hand.
If everybody could see Sita's face right now, she is just glowing.
Yes, she is.
From seeing him yesterday.
Well, you know, when you come from a culture like mine where I was born and raised in a village, I was an illegitimate child. My mother was my father's second wife, wasn't even married. And, you know, my mom had a really rough life. It was very challenging for us children. And when you come from a background like that, where you're not sure where the next meal is coming from, you don't have electricity and running water, and then you meet one of the Kennedys. Life is all about
live faith and in person,
and luck.
Right up front.
Yeah, faith and luck. But also, I think if you have a good heart and you want to use your voice in a positive manner to help the world, not because you're expecting something back, but because you feel like it's your calling, then great things happen to you, and you can't sit at home and expect it to happen.
Right.
You know, I was telling you, somebody at the gym asked me, well, why do you give money to all these causes and political candidates and all that? And I said, well, let's be honest. You know, if you sit at home, nothing happens. You can't sit at home and complain that something is not right politically or socially. You have to get up and be part of the change. And if you want to support candidates, there's a few ways you can help them. You write a letter to the editor, you knock on doors, you give a little change, you be part of the team, but
That's
you
right.
can't complain, right?
That's right.
So anyway, so I watched the Oscars and I watched the Me Too movement and what people were saying. And then I was talking with my friend Mona Sheikh in Los Angeles, and I said, are you going to call in? And she said, yes. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Me Too movement and her background. So Monica, Monica Shaw. Monica was here last week.
That's right. Yeah. Monica was here.
Two Indians in a row. How you like that? So last week was Monica Shaw. This week is Mona Sheikh.
Right.
It's a little bit of a different. One's Indian, one's Pakistani.
There you go.
So Mona, thank you for calling in.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be on the show. How are you guys?
We are awesome, okay. And we're more excited that you're taking the time. You actually woke up early in LA today, huh?
This is very unusual for a comic to wake up this early. So yeah, my style has been cramped a little bit, but that's okay, Sita. I will do that for you.
Oh, how sweet! So listen. So Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is a very fun and unscripted show. We have a lot of people that just tune in just because we don't work off a script. We just speak from the heart. So I want you to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about your background and how did you become a comedian?
So how did I become a comedian? Traumatic childhood. So that always helps. Just a lot of low self-esteem, a lot of, you know, childhood spankings that just lead to you growing up to become a comic. But so I was born in Pakistan and raised until the age of 15 and then moved to New York. I have four older brothers, and our family moved. The thing with my family was, and I feel really blessed to be that, is that, you know, I have four older brothers. I'm the youngest and the only girl in the family. And everyone in the family was like, well, the boys can go abroad. The boys can go to America and study, but not the girl. And my mom felt otherwise. My mom was like, look, I was held behind, you know, because I was the youngest of my brothers. And, you know, they let them get educated and they didn't really let me get educated. So she was like, I'm not going to do that to my daughter. And I feel very blessed to, you know, have a mother like that who would give me the opportunity. So, Yeah, so then I moved to New York and didn't really fall into comedy right away. I did have four older brothers. So, you know, when you have four older brothers, dating is not really part of your life. No boy can really, I mean, you're
And the culture doesn't permit it either. I know, I mean, I mean, I'm Indian too, and I remember my son saying to me once, he said, you know, and he lives in L.A. too, and he says, Mom, you know, you ruined my life. And I said, how so? And he was saying, you know, when he was at Satellite High School, I told him you can't date any girls because if you get them pregnant and you have to pay child support, you got to take care of them. And then he says, well, you said treat all the girls as if I would treat my sisters. So, but all my friends were dating. And so he goes, you ruined my life. I didn't date till I get to college, which was at a disadvantage for him, he says, you know.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the thing about Desi parents, right? So you don't let us date. You don't let us, like, build a skill set. And then when we get in our 20s or our 30s, you're like, why aren't you married? And
right.
You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You didn't let me date this entire time. I don't even know how to talk to the opposite gender. And I'm supposed to, like, have game now to, like, lock it down? I don't even know how to do this.
Well, you know, even my daughters, I remember taking a photograph of the license plate of the young man that came to take my daughter to the prom. And she's like, what are you doing? And I said, well, I want to run his plates first. And she's like, Mom, you can't do that. But I was like, well, I don't know. What if he has power windows and he locks his car and then you can't come out? And she's like, Mom, we're just going 2 miles. But the thing is, you know, you worry about your children because they didn't ask to be brought into this world. You brought them here and you want to take such good care of them. And at some point it becomes suffocating, I think, for the Indian kids anyways, Pakistani kids, foreigners, you know?
Yes. Desi kids, yeah, Desi. I mean, you know, it's like such a cultural thing, right? So you come to America. So, like, for me, I mean, I can be truly, I mean, I went through identity crisis for 10 years. I didn't know where I belong, you know, because you come from another country. You come here as a teenager, and I came at a pretty tender age, but, you know, my parents are like, 15, she'll be fine, she'll figure it out. And it's like, no, that is a terrible age to send your kid. Because, you know, it's such a, like, I came here, everyone in high school already had their friends, I was this weird, awkward kid out, you know, I went to an inner city high school in Jersey City.
I lived in Jersey City.
Oh, did you? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry for you, too. Did you go to Snyder High School?
Trust me, I'm very sorry for myself. I mean, high school was rough. High school was terrible. And, you know, it's like I was such a tomboy growing up. I used to, and we were such poor immigrant kids, I used to wear my brother's shirts to school.
I know, people make, my son once, I remember my son once told me that somebody asked him if his parents owned a Haji Mart, and then somebody called him a dookie stain. And you know what? He was about, I don't know, 6 years old. We lived in Indiana at one point in our life, and it did bother them. You know, the children had a lot of slurs sometimes, not all the time, but people would say things that were hurtful. And they did have a bit of an identity crisis because a lot of us, you know, buy houses in affluent neighborhoods where the children are brown and they're sticking out like a sore thumb. And you expect them to go to school, and other people who are not accustomed to seeing this much diversity, they're looking at your children, well, what are you? Are you Puerto Rican? Are you Indian? Where are you from? And you have to go over the whole thing all over again. My father's Persian. My mother's Indian. I live here and there. And I think in some ways we do it's a disservice to our children, too, when we don't listen to them and they tell us what's happening at the schools. Because we tell them, just suck it up and fit in, right?
Still there?
Are you still there? I'm not sure what happened.
I think we might have lost her.
We might have lost her, but that's usually what happened.
Yeah.
We should call her back.
There she is.
So anyway, so that's what happened with my children. You know, people would call them names and stuff. We got you.
Okay.
Yeah. We got you. I don't know what happened to a call with Mona Sheikh, who's calling in from L.A., or a comedian. And okay, Mona, are you back on?
I am. Yes, sorry. You know, in my part of the country, you know, the phone line service is not that good. It's like the same level as the way it is in Pakistan. So.
Well, I was just saying that my children went to schools where, you know, we had bought a house in a pretty affluent neighborhood, and they had to constantly explain, you know, their father's Persian, their mother's Indian, they're brown, they're sticking out. And we're telling them, suck it up, fit in. We're paying taxes for this public school. You better get all A's. Don't backtalk the teacher. Come home. Go to college. But, you know, it is very difficult for children who are different in some schools.
Yes. But, you know, it's interesting you say that about that. And, you know, me being one of the kids who, you know, went to school here and, like, kind of went through that whole identity crisis thing. You know, even though...
Oh boy! I guess that LA service.
Maybe we should call her back, but I don't know. She'll call us back.
Yeah, she'll call back.
We'll just stay by the phone. It's okay. That's okay. We'll figure it out.
But it is. And she had posted on Twitter too about how her high school experience led her to start to become a comedian, and a lot about the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. Well, good. At least she's taking the time to call us.
Yep,
well, you know what? That's something we're going to have to become active about, is getting the phone lines fixed where Mona Sheikh lives.
That's right.
In L.A. We're
going
to have to call the mayor of that town and ask him if they could kindly fix the phone lines so that our friend could call in. Maybe it's a cell service, because I know if my son is in certain areas, you can't get cell service as well. That's a bummer, because we were getting such a nice interview out of that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The line is still open. Is she on there? Hello, Mona. So we need to hang up. She's going to call back.
Yep.
So Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, when we tell our friends it is unscripted.
We mean it.
It's not like we could just fix things and pre-record it and then add and delete, edit. Right? Yeah. And edit
right.
it, right?
Right.
So, but you know, Ellen, you were saying you went to inner city school as well, but did you have any experience at that school?
Oh, yeah. There was gun violence in elementary school. We were there.
Mona? Mona Sheikh, is that you there?
I am. I'm here. I'm back. I'm not. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, stay still. Don't move.
So we were going to ask you a little bit about how do you tell us about your jokes. Where do you get your experience, and how do you get your material for your comedy?
Well, you know, I mean, look, I do like a lot of observational stuff. I do talk about, you know, my background, and I talk about what it was like growing up in the household that I grew up in. My mom is also insane, so you know, there's a lot of unintentional comedy that comes out of my mom's mouth. I mean, my mom actually, like we were talking about dating earlier. And, you know, my mom was living with me for a little bit, and I asked her, I was like, Mom, I'm going on a date with this guy. Like, what do you think I should say to him? And she was like, you should tell him right away you want to get married and have children. And I was like, Mom, that is by far, like, the worst game ever. Like, he would run for the hills. Like, I can't do that, you know? My mom just has a lot of, because, you know, it's, again, it's like this weird cultural, you know, gap that she doesn't understand. Like, she didn't date. You know, my grandparents found my parents and were just like, I think you guys should get married, and boom, there it is.
The arranged marriages last a long time too. I have a lot of sisters that had arranged marriages. I was the only one who was allowed to choose, and I ended up getting a divorce after 7 years, and now I'm happily married for 27 years to Ahmed.
Wow,
but thank you. But you know, another thing too with the cultures, I remember my husband's face when my daughter said she was going to live together with her boyfriend when she went up to law school. Now, my husband's Persian, I'm Indian, I'm Hindu, he's just a nature lover, my children love Jesus, and my best friend is a Jew. How you like that?
Wow, love that.
And
a partridge in a pear tree.
Ahmed is from Iran, he's Persian. He was born Muslim, but he doesn't practice it. He just loves people and nature, and he believes God is in all things. And so you should see his face. So I'm now trying to explain to him that all my friends whose children are in college and are Catholics and Protestants and Muslims and Hindus, their daughters live together too. And then they get married. And you know, it's kind of it's like a crossroads in your culture at that point, because you live in the States and you have to assimilate into the culture. And he was okay with it. It worked out fine.
Yeah. But see, it's not like that with the Pakistani culture. The Pakistanis that I meet here in California, and even the ones I met on the East Coast, I mean, they have a real problem with their daughters living with someone before they get married. Like, that's not even an option. Even if the guy that they're getting engaged to, and even though he's like a fellow Pakistani Muslim guy, that's just not a thing. That's just, you know, they just kind of frown upon the whole thing. They're like, no, you'll live together when you get married, or we'll just marry you off younger. Like, if you want to get married at 20 or 21, we'll do that, but you're not living with the guy. So I think Pakistani community still has long ways to go in accepting and embracing that. Like, I have a Pakistani friend of mine, and the guy that she was dating was an Indian Hindu guy, and it was a really big deal for their family. They were like, first of all, he's Hindu, so that's like a no. But eventually, he's such a great guy that the family, you know, he won their hearts, and, you know, she ended up getting married to him. But it was a real challenge. Like, for 7 years, they were kind of fighting and kind of being like, look, we are in love. Like, we want to live together, and we're going to live together.
It's amazing,
isn't it?
Isn't it amazing, Mona, that some of our people, they still brought that divisive nature with them. If a Hindu want to marry a Christian, or a Muslim want to marry a Jew, you still have to prove your case that, you know, at the end of the day, everybody wants to be loved and appreciated no matter who they are.
Yes.
And people want to be free to choose somebody to love and make a go of it. And if you get a divorce, you get a divorce. So what? You won't be the only one?
Exactly. You know what? I really think that the only way we're going to solve any kind of racism in the world, and even racism among the South Asian community, is just like people intermarrying. Like, because there should come a point where you can't tell who's Muslim, who's Hindu, who's Christian. It's like you all look the same. It's like, wow, you're all beige people. I don't even know where to go. It's like you all have like silky straight hair. What are you? Oh, you all have like these lovely, you know, amazing, like beautiful eyes. I can't even tell. Are those Hindu eyes or some Muslim eyes? I can't even tell. Everybody should just blend in.
They should get away from that box that says what race. So we have like a few more minutes, and I wanted to ask you, so when you're on stage and you're using your life experience or your material for comedy, and if you ever have a joke that bombs, how do you handle rejection?
Well, you know, I grew up with parents who constantly rejected you, so, you know, I already have that
So it's
practice.
Easy.
That's really easy. I'm just like, oh, the jokes didn't work. All right, I've done that with my family. I mean, look, it's part of the journey, right? And it's part of the process of being a stand-up comic. I mean, you know, bombing or, you know, not doing well is just something that you get instantly, you know? Stand-up comedy is unlike any other art, like unlike writing, unlike acting, unlike anything, because you get instant response. If something doesn't work, it's an instant response. I mean, you just kind of
So you have to have thick skin. You have to know how to handle it. So give us your website if somebody wants. Give us your website before your phone cuts off again, so at least people can go and look and see what you're doing.
It's not me. It's the Pakistani service. It's not even me. It's the Pakistani phone service. It's not my fault. You guys can check me out on Twitter at Mona's Comedy. You can check out my website at Mona Shaikh, MonaShaikh.com. You can check out my videos on YouTube under Mona Shaikh. And that's kind of about it.
Before you go, I know I had sent you a copy of my book, and I remember, I don't know if I sent, I think I sent you a copy of my book, right? 18 Brothers and Sisters? Did I send it for you?
I think you did, yes.
Yeah, but you know, I spoke about my mother's challenges and struggles with domestic violence, and of course my own with my former husband. And then, of course, now we have this Me Too movement. And I wanted to ask you, where do you think this movement is going from here? Are we going to have a shift in this country about how people feel about bullying and domestic violence and people harassing women at work? What do you think there's going to be a shift?
You know, I believe the shift has already begun. I mean, when you see a big, huge personality like Harvey Weinstein, and, you know, you have all these big people that are just going down, their careers are ending. I mean, Louis C.K., what a massive comedian. Who would ever think that Louis C.K.'s career would just come to a grinding halt like that? I mean, absolutely. Now, this is just going to bleed into other industries, which it needs to. But it's interesting how, and it's funny, I was talking to a friend about this last night, that we haven't even tapped into the comedy world, even though we've tapped into, you know, the acting world or the producing world of how actresses have been harassed. But in the stand-up comedy world, that's not even something that people have even started to talk about. I mean, I cannot tell you how much sexual harassment is pervasive in the stand-up comedy world, from bookers to venues. I mean, to other, like, established male comics, how they treat you. I mean, it's really bad. And I just feel like this is such a sleeping giant that has been awakened. I mean, look at what's just happening right now. I mean, there's a huge march going on in Pakistan now because all the women are rising up and they're like, we're not going to take sexual harassment anymore.
Yeah, I always wonder what gave people the right to feel that they can have such power over other human beings. I watched it as a little girl,
it's
you know.
Patriarchy, you know that.
Yes,
but
and
you know
I watched
it's patriarchy.
It. Yes, I do, and yeah. I watched it as a little girl, too. I would watch how men would treat women, not all the time, but there were certain men that felt as though that women are lower than themselves, and they should be to be the boss, the master, you know. And I'm glad for my daughters and the generations to come that this is out in the open, and I sense the shift, and I see it, and I feel like women are going to be safer in every workplace, you know, in every...
Yeah. I mean, look, that's just the thing that's happening in America, though. I mean, there's the rest of the world that still has to catch up to it.
And so as a woman of color and those of us who use our voices to promote diversity and love and unity and all these things, it is challenging for you at times. How do you cope with it?
You just call them out. I don't care. I call people out. I was being interviewed at iHeartRadio earlier this year, and I got questioned like, hey, have you been sexually harassed by an established male comedian? And I said, yes, absolutely. Russell Peters is a sexual harassing predator. That's who he is. He has sexually harassed me multiple times on stage, off stage, and that is what he does. Now, he is one of the highest paid comedians in the world. He's one of the top 10 comedians, highest paid comedians in the world. And every time this man has seen me or talked to me, that's what he does. Now, does he do it with other female comics? He probably does because he feels entitled to it. But, you know, Russell Peters, as you know, is huge in the South Asian community. He's huge in the Middle Eastern community. I mean, this is someone who's worth $25 million.
Yeah, I've watched his videos. Isn't he? He's in Toronto, I think, based in Toronto. Is he Indian?
He's based here.
Yeah,
he's Canadian Indian.
Yeah, that's right. I've watched him. Yeah, and his jokes are, he really gets an audience going. But I didn't realize that. I'm glad you said something because, you know, we should boycott the people that don't want to change and don't want to be part of what's happening in our world and our nation is how to respect other human beings. And I've heard his jokes. So Mona Sheikh, you're calling in from LA. We're so grateful to have your friendship and have you speak about all these issues.
So
give us your website one more time because we're going to go to commercial break in a little bit. And we will post it, and we want to see you live. I want to see you live, and Ellen. I don't know if you've seen her on her website. She's beautiful.
Oh yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
You look like you're related to me. Thank you.
That was a good plug for yourself. I like that.
Well, you know what? But really listen, good. Everybody knows what I say. I'm always saying I'm the dark girl in the room. Put the flash on. I'm a dark Indian girl, you know, and I grew up all my life saying,
"Oh, you're not that dark."
You know, I was like, "Oh, geez." My sisters were always like, "You know, we have no electricity. Tell Sita to flash her teeth. We can't find her." Mm-hmm. And do you know that? That was horrible as a kid. You know, so you have a complex of being dark. It's like now you grow up and you're like, "Hey, with a little makeup, it's not too bad," you know.
Well, you know, yours is at least a little. Mine was so bad. My mom used to bleach my skin to make it lighter. My mom used to bleach my skin. I don't know if you know this, or I don't know if it's like this in the Caribbean, but you know, there's a belief system in South Asia that if you drink milk, it makes your skin white. And my mom used to feed me milk, but I was lactose intolerant.
Oh boy,
that never worked out for me.
No, in Trinidad, what they do, the Indian creams that they get from India, those Vico creams is huge. And I've always said to my family, once you grow up and you realize who you are and your feet's grounded on the ground, what we should be pushing is the self-esteem to love yourself the way God made you. You should not be spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on Vico cream so boys and girls could get lighter. Just be grateful for who you are and love yourself. So
and
I
I'm
think
buying self-tanner, so there you go.
In India and in the Caribbean to get lighter skin. And I always tell people, white is not always right. You could love your brown yourself. You can. Yeah. You can love your black self, brown self, in between.
Listen,
all shades. God made them all.
I say when you're brown, you got the crown. That's what I say.
Yes.
That's my thing, you know?
So, Mona, thank you.
But brown got crown. hey, you guys can check me out on my website at monashake.com. And when you come to L.A., please come check out the live shows. I have all my live shows posted there. And, I have a huge show coming up on March 28th called Minority Reports at Irvine Improv, which is a huge show. I've been... So I'm the first South Asian female comic ever to have my own show at the World Famous Comedy Store, which is a huge comedy club. It's the legendary comedy club where you're Robin Williams and Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, you know, walk the...
Don't be surprised if you see me show up there.
That's right.
Don't be surprised. I might buy a ticket and come out. And hey, you have a standing
invitation. I would love that.
You have an invitation to stay in my guest room and eat my curry chicken and rice whenever you're in Melbourne, Florida.
You're so sweet.
Thank you so much for calling in. And we are going to take a quick break here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to hear from our sportsponsors. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars.
Cloud Nine Sleep Shop in the Merritt Square Mall has expanded to meet the growing needs of the community and customers. Cloud Nine Sleep Shop now has a 10,000 square foot showroom with a wider variety of choices for customers to shop for bedroom, living room, and dining room furniture from nationally recognized brands such as Ashley Furniture. Cloud Nine Sleep Shop also carries memory foam mattresses from Serta, Ashley Sleep, Enso, and many more. Cloud 9 has furniture to meet the needs of budget-minded customers with quality furniture. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop is a family-owned business that understands the needs of growing families. Furnish your home with one-stop shopping from Cloud 9 Sleep Shop. Cloud 9 Sleep Shop, centrally located in Brevard at the Merritt Square Mall. For more information, go to their website at cloud9sleepshop.com.
When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Sometimes I like saying my name because some people don't know if my name is Sita Begee or Sita Durgin Begee or Sita Ishmael Begee. And you know, once my name helped me out so much because I went to a fundraiser President Clinton was coming into town, and the lady knew I'd bought a ticket. And she looked under Sita Begid, and she looked under Sita Durjan Begid, and she looked under Sita Ishmael. She goes, never mind, just go in, just go in. So the usher took me right up to the front to where all the high donors were, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
It's that dress you're wearing.
Yes, and my friends were texting me, and they're like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm here. Where are you? We can't. I was in the front. They just got fed up with the name, you know, but it's okay. I have with the Homeland Security once, which is on my passport.
That's right.
But anyways, the first part of the show was awesome, Ellen.
Yes.
Mona Shake, from LA, comedian. And she writes and blogs.
From my same hometown. Sad for both of us.
Yes. But we grow up. You know, we grow up and we find our path in life, and we do what we can. We use our voices for the common good, for good things. And that's what she's doing.
That's right.
She's spreading the news about, you know, how it is to be a Desi girl. And that's mm-hmm. awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, our second segment is with my friend, Erica. And Erica spells her name, believe it or not, E-R-I-C-K.
A.
With the C and the K, which
Erica
is usually
McKinney.
It's usually one or the other, right?
Yes.
And she has both. And Erica was on the show before, but when she came on the show before to talk about epilepsy, I was not here. I was in sunny Trinidad and Tobago.
That's right.
And I remember, Ellen, you had texted me and said, everything is going to be fine. She's not here. Something happened. So I wanted to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that Erica's here. She is the Advancement and Educational Specialist for the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida. She's got involved with the Epilepsy Foundation. When did you get involved? About 11 years ago?
11. I just hit my 11-year mark, my work anniversary.
And what made you get involved with the Epilepsy Foundation?
Well, actually, they posted a position that was open for case manager, and I had worked with children with autism, mental ill children. So I had kind of wanted to get into a different population. So, bing, bang, boom. I never saw a seizure in my life when I took this position. At that time, I was a case manager. Never saw a seizure, never knew anybody that had epilepsy. So it was a big educational process for me, a big eye-awakener. Because I'll tell you, when I run support groups also, and we'll discuss that. But in my support group, when one of our clients had a seizure, I'm going to tell you, it's kind of scary when you see your first seizure.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, as a nurse, I have seen quite a few. And, you know, in the old days, they used to tell you if somebody had a diagnosis of seizures or epilepsy, which is the same thing, to always have a tongue blade at the bedside so they don't bite their tongue.
Yeah.
And that scared. I mean, that was a scary thing that you would be admitting a patient that you have to be careful that they're going to be biting their tongue.
Well, they can bite their tongue, but they always wanted you to put something in the mouth because everyone thought you could swallow your tongue, and it's physically impossible to swallow your tongue.
Yes.
Right.
So that was just like a myth.
That's like the first thing.
Yes. Yes.
Please don't ever put anything in your mouth.
We have to bust that. We have to bust that out.
Do you really want someone putting something in your mouth?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So you started as a case manager, you transitioned into a certified navigator for the ACA, and then into a community resource specialist, and now you hold the title now that you have with Advanced and Educational Specialist. So what are some of your duties with the Epilepsy Foundation?
As I said, I run support groups. So mm-hmm. we have support groups throughout the state. We actually are in 35 counties throughout the state. So we are the leading primary source for people with epilepsy in the state of Florida.
Right. And the mission, our dear listeners, for the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida is to lead the fight to overcome the challenges of living with epilepsy and to accelerate therapies to stop seizures, find cures, and save lives.
That's right.
It's beautiful. Perfect in a few sentences.
That's it.
So tell our listeners, what exactly is epilepsy, my dear Erica McKinney, with a K? She's got just a fancy name.
N-S-C,
C and a K.
Okay, so epilepsy is a neurological disorder of the brain, and it's actually uncontrolled, unprovoked seizures. And I think it's important to know that it's unprovoked is epilepsy, because when you're talking, people are like, okay, well, this person is detoxing from drugs or alcohol, and they're having seizures. Okay, that's not epilepsy. That's provoked
by
that detoxing. So we're talking uncontrolled, unprovoked. Here's a great statistic. 1 in 26 people will develop epilepsy at some time in their life in the United States. That is a very big number.
Repeat that. That
1 in 26.
1 out of 26.
So is it reversible? Is it something that people get and then they can...
Sometimes,
grow
some
out
children
of it.
May grow out of it, but generally, that's not quite the case. It's controlled with medication or a brain surgery. I mean, clients are really excited when they find out that they are a candidate for brain surgery because these medications are hard on the body.
Yeah, lots of side effects. Lots of side and lots of lab tests.
Yes, constant lab monitoring.
Yes,
to the doctor to test your levels to make sure they're therapeutic. So if brain surgery is an option for them, most of them will take it.
And there's a stigma attached to that as well.
I
remember back home when someone had a seizure, and you know, it's so sad because not the entire world does not know. They don't have the education on epilepsy. And they would say, if somebody had a seizure, they would say, well, that person is catching fits. Have you heard that? They call it fits as well. In some countries, that's what they call it, right? But it was actually a seizure. That person needed medical attention and they needed help.
Right?
So what should one do to assist someone having a seizure? What would you recommend?
Okay, first thing is, please stay calm. Do not run away from a person having a seizure. I don't care if you're in a store. Do not leave someone alone that's having a seizure. And you got to stay calm. Listen, I'm going to give you the facts. You're going to time that seizure. Seizures generally last 5 minutes or less. It's not always necessary to call 911. There are certain circumstances, but you're going to time that seizure, and you're going to put the person on their side. So that way, if there's saliva or anything coming out, that they're not choking on
it. You want to protect the airway.
That's right.
Most important.
And their head. So you want to grab something soft if you can, a sweatshirt or a backpack or your purse or something, and put it underneath their head so they're not hitting their head against the ground causing more injury.
Right.
So basically, you know, and you're going to stay with that person. Do not hold a person down that's having a seizure. Do not restrict them. You can break bones and cause further injury. There is nothing a person you can do as someone assisting someone having a seizure to stop that seizure from happening. That seizure is going to take care of itself. You cannot, there's nothing.
And there are different types, right? There's a grand mal, and there's different.
Oh, yeah.
So tell our audience.
Different types of seizures. If,
do you know? Well, tell us some of the I wouldn't say popular seizures, but the most common ones.
Grand mal, which
the
is
grand mal.
We used to call it grand mals now.
3 to 5 minutes, is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Three to five. And generally, the seizure is over. And that's for the tonic. We now call it tonic-clonic. But people are accustomed to grand mal. And that's what we think. We think people.
No, you know my age, because that's what we learned in nursing school, grand
mal. Well, I remember a girl that I used to play with when I was a kid, that she would just stop in the middle of playing ball, and her eyes would just roll back in the back of her head. There was no, like, convulsing or anything.
No, yeah.
But I would run up to her and, like, what's the matter? What's the matter? And she wouldn't answer me, and I was, like, kind of, like, shaking her a little bit, because I didn't know. You know, I didn't know what it was, but...
Then you found out,
it was
a seizure.
Right. Yeah, I told my mom, and that's what she told me it was.
Yeah, that's the thing. We think convulsions, but it doesn't always happen that way. I mean, there's absence seizures, which is the petit mal, where people, like you're saying, will stop, stare off in the middle of a conversation, and then they'll pick right up that conversation within probably 5 to 10 seconds.
Right.
Sometimes it's up to 30 seconds, but generally not. You know, I think that's this. The reason for 1 in 26 now is that we're diagnosing earlier in life, so. Like children with these absent seizures, well, the teacher would think before, you know, and this is why we educate teachers and everyone, that little Johnny isn't paying attention. He's staring out the window when he was actually having a seizure. So, you know, sometimes
that's why it's so important to educate people about all these things. It is. It's all about awareness and education, isn't it?
That's my job. That's my main role.
Right. And so we have to tell our listeners we're talking with Erica McKinney, and she's the education specialist for the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida. And before we go into other questions, I mean, our show is so, it's really fun and unscripted, and you feel like you are learning as you go along. Give us the websites if somebody wanted to go on and look at it. They can go and look at the Epilepsy Foundation of Florida, or how to get a hold of you.
Yes, you can go to www.efof.org. And we have all of the listings of all of the offices. We have one in Jensen Beach at the Treasure Coast, and I'm in New Smyrna Beach.
It's a great website, by the way. Whoever is your website developer, tell them they did a really good job.
Thank you.
I went on it, and I was...
Great development. Yeah.
So, no, I remember the first time I saw somebody seize, I was in Hallandale, Florida, and we had an Italian patient. Of course, I can't say her name, although she's passed away. And I remember being in the elevator with her, and she started to seize. And they were looking around for something to put in her mouth so that she wouldn't bite her tongue, because it was a grand mal. And my assistant director of nurses was a nurse from Jamaica. And I remember her saying, do we have anything that we could... And she took her shoe off.
Oh,
she wiped it. She just wiped the heel, and I remember her saying she was going to, if she had to, she would, but she didn't have to because the seizure stopped. But imagine being in an elevator with someone who's seizing, and you can't put your finger in there. You don't have a glove. You don't really have anything. I mean, eyeglasses, we're thinking maybe but you could break those. But it was a pretty rough seizure. And when the door opened, we were so grateful to just grab the patient and put her in her bed to take a rest. Because we felt really bad about that. But I remember her saying, you have to always have something to stick in their mouth so that they don't bite their tongue off. And you're saying now the education now is so gone,
okay,
right?
Okay, now you're showing your age.
Yes. This was like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So now, you know, you're going to stay by that person. If the woman is pregnant, you definitely always call 911. If the person is in water, we always call 911. If it's a first-time seizure, always 911. After 5 minutes, yes. And, you know, just stay with that person, and it's okay to put your hand on them. I've had clients tell me, I can hear you, even though I can't respond to you.
So what would you have done if they were afraid that they were going to bite that tongue and it's going to start bleeding?
Oh, that's fine. That's very normal. They will bite their tongue. I've had clients that will bite their tongue little pieces off. But if there's a lot of blood, then you're going to call 911. If there's injury, you're going to call 911. I mean, if you're feeling in your gut that something, this is not right, and there's too much blood, or something's going on here, just go for it.
Because I remember using the tongue blade on her. I remember the nursing assistants would call us and say, nurse, hurry, she's having a seizure. And we would grab it, because in those days you just kept it in a Ziploc bag right above the bedside, and stick it in. It was part of the job if somebody was brought in with a diagnosis of a seizure. And I remember we did use it a few times because we were always afraid, the fear of her biting her tongue. But now you're saying it's okay if they bite it and a little bit of blood come out. So I guess that's why it's so important to have in service and ongoing education.
Mm-hmm. So what is the Epilepsy Foundation using for the donations for?
To go towards all of our services. We run such a gamut of services. So we have prevention and education, which is part of my job. And basically I go out in the community and I do things like this. I raise awareness and I do presentations in the schools for the kids and the teachers. For first responders, police officers, medical
nurses, a lot of older nurses like myself. Yeah,
I'll go in and do a lunch and learn at the doctor's offices if they're giving you the time.
Yes, and they should.
You know, 20-minute presentation. I can do. I can speak very fast. I'm from the north originally. I can get this information out. I'm not boring. I'm entertaining. I have free tchotchkes that I can toss around the room. You know,
you are entertaining because I spoke to you last couple weeks ago. We talked about why she didn't show up on the show the last time. And just to get away from epilepsy for a little bit and just lighten up viewpoint with Sita and friends a little bit, you told me about a snake.
Yeah, I had a snake.
And I had no idea. I had no idea that's what had happened. And for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, this is such a cool story because Erica McKinney was supposed to come on the show and talk about epilepsy and what we're doing at the Epilepsy Foundation. And she didn't make it to Brevard County, Florida, because a snake got into her car.
Yeah, it was in my engine, and like animal control came and tried to put a hot dog on the engine to pull it out.
The hot dog, because he would eat it?
Yeah, because he would, you know.
Snakes like hot dogs?
Well, apparently not. Didn't work.
It was a $185 hot dog
that it cost her. $185 snake.
So he never came out.
He did. No, he never came out on his own. I had to have my car towed because they're like, listen, if you're driving down the interstate and that snake comes out of the air conditioning down on the floor or through the vents, think about it. You're going to wreck.
Freaks me out.
I mean, snakes. And I know we live in Florida, right? And we shouldn't be afraid of, but I am afraid of snakes. Snakes and frogs.
Yeah. I'm not afraid if I can see them and I can, like,
they're under control.
Or I can take a stick and, like, move them. Or, you know, I never hurt anything. I'm like, you know, all sentient beings, right? But I make sure that as long as I can pick it up from a distance.
It is. Well, no, that's why I think, you know, when we have a show, I try to, I'm looking for guests for the show, I always try to get people that are able to come on the show and have a good time with Ellen and I while we give out the information, because the topic you're talking about, epilepsy, there's so many people that I think it is a stigma and they're afraid to tell someone that I have a diagnosis of epilepsy. Even I'm noticing a lot of people with even a mild case of autism, afraid. people are so afraid of the other guy or the other gal thinking something bad of them when they've got a diagnosis, a legit diagnosis of something. Right. So, no, so it, away from our snake story, where does people go, people in need of assistance and information, where can they go to get information if they need it?
Okay, well, again, they can go to our website, which is www.efof.org. And let me give you some information about what services we offer, so then they can call our 1-800 number for services. So besides prevention education, we also have, we send kids to Camp Boggy Creek, which I don't know if, you know, if yeah. your listeners are familiar with, but it's a camp for children with disabilities. Mm-hmm. So we send a bunch of kids to camp, usually like 30 or 40 of them, for the week for children with epilepsy, which is so great because then the parents get a break for a week and the kids are, they have incredible medical staff there. And the kids are well taken care of, and the parents can just go and have time to themselves for a week. So we love that. And we also have medical services, case management. So we are a nonprofit, so we do fundraising is big for us. But on a sliding fee scale, clients can come, people can call in, and we'll set you up with a medical case manager if you don't have insurance. And that way we can help them get to a neurologist. We can assist them with filling out applications for patients' assistance for medications, you know, to get them, you know, discounted. We also have just regular case management. So, okay, so you need a case manager because I need help finding a transportation. I need help finding a place to live. So that's what just case management is. And we have some psychological services down south. And we have navigation still for the Affordable Care Act. We still have navigators around for that.
Right. Do you ever run into people that are so beside themselves because they don't have any health insurance, and they've got a child or a parent or relative diagnosed with epilepsy?
Yes.
And in those cases, what happens?
Basically, what they're gonna, you know, caregivers have a lot when you're caregiving for somebody with epilepsy. It's a huge ordeal because it takes
a toll on a human, no matter what. It is
because you're also their transportation. Because, you know, in the state of Florida, you have to be 6 months seizure-free on medication in order to retain your driver's license.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. 6 months seizure-free. If you're not on medications, it's a year. So a lot of them aren't able to drive. And some of we don't have the best transportation system much around here. You know, we don't have a tube. You know, we don't have a train that you can take.
You know? Did you just say the tube? You're talking like London.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think of. I just love that place. But so transportation is an issue. So we can try to assist them with getting transportation. You know, maybe we can help them pay for their bus ticket or something like that. So, and for these caregivers, in order, you know, like I said, on a sliding fee scale, it's really important to get those EEGs and MRIs are necessary for people with epilepsy and CT scans. Those are not cheap tests. Those are very expensive tests. And we can assist with them to get those, you know, testing done to find out why is this happening. Because 70% of people with epilepsy, there's no reason why. They have no answer or cause. You know, because, you know, did you hit your head? Because traumatic brain injury is big, you know, a big cause of epilepsy. Strokes, tumors, things like that.
And so why do you think people are not aware of epilepsy the way they should be? Because a lot of people just know about the seizures part of it. But they don't know anything else.
They don't know what lies underneath it.
Yeah, so how can we help to spread more awareness to this? Are you guys giving classes, like maybe in high schools and
Absolutely.
Things like that?
I have a great story for you. So I go and I do kids of all ages. So I was in this kindergarten class. And, you know, we bring it down a notch for them. I mean, you know, I don't use big terms. We bring it down to their level, you know. And I give out these pencils with little brain erasers on them. You know, and I talk, you know, I basically tell them, you know, most of them, a lot of them have pets. I'm like, anything that has a brain can have a seizure. I'm here to tell you. And so this one kid's like, okay. He's like, so I have a lizard. Can he have a seizure? I said, does he have a brain? And he's like, yeah. You know, and they're all sitting there, you know, cross-legged on the rug. And they've got their pencils. And so this one kid is like, you know, doing the pee-pee dance, you know.
Yeah. No, because even on the playground, if a child develops a seizure on the playground, right, you have the teachers who are aware of it, what to do. And, I mean, it is scary for the other children. And then, you know, you kind of clear the area and tell them what to do and what not to do. And if you need 911,
well,
you call
and these
them.
Kids need to know also what to do. So this little guy raises his hand at the end. He says, so I have a turtle. And so what if he has a seizure inside of his shell? What do I do? Okay, now I'm thinking, I don't have an answer for that. I've been doing this a long time, and I'm not prepared. So anyway, his buddy knee, like, just takes his elbow and, yeah, and dings him and says, hey, stupid, you take the pencil she gave you and you stick it up the turtle's butt so his head will come out, and then you can put him on his side. I mean, out of the mouths of babes. You know, I'm like, no, nothing up their butt, nothing in the mouth, okay? Right. Like kindergarten, you know? It's
right. Like, so what events, we got a few minutes left of today. What events do you have coming up?
Okay. Right now we have Walk the Talk for Epilepsy, and we have a whole list. There's one in New Smyrna. There's one in the Treasure Coast. So you can come walk with us. In New Smyrna, it's 3.5 miles on the beach.
Nice.
Yes.
So, and I also saw on the website you're looking for volunteers.
Absolutely. We're always looking for volunteers.
Volunteers for what?
To distribute, to help with the fundraising efforts, for in-office things, you know, simple things, calling people. We have volunteers run the whole gamut of we'll take you. We will find a fit for you.
we'll find a fit
for you.
And that's in New Smyrna, and also, is there one local here?
There's
in
down
Brevard
in Jensen.
County? Jensen Beach. Excellent.
And the thing is, a lot of people don't know this, but sometimes lack of sleep can cause seizures as well.
Absolutely, lack of sleep.
And definitely. A lot of people don't know that, but I remember reading that in law in
heat.
Heat
is
nursing
a big
school.
One. Heat is a big inducer for seizures.
Yes.
Right. So, and the medication is so expensive too. Is there assistance for people that need to buy all these meds? Because some people have to take not just one, not just two, but three or four meds to help with seizures. And I know we shouldn't really bring up politics when we're talking about certain topics, but really and truly, you ought to have people in office that understands this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many people don't have a health insurance? They don't have a drug plan.
Right.
And yet still we have drugs that are so expensive. Yeah. We need people to negotiate so that we can have drugs available for people with all diseases at an affordable price.
Yeah, and that's why there's patient assistance. Like I said, that's where our case managers come in. They help you with that paperwork because it can be kind of extensive at times, so you can get a discount. So if they're in need of services, I would like them to call 1-877-553-7453. And again, our website is efof.org. I thank you so much for having me on today.
The thing is, too, a lot of people don't understand the different types of seizures as well, and they don't know that, you know, from a grand use of the clonic and tonic. I would like to see more people sit down with their children when we have a show like this, or even if you're going to school and you're talking, that people should sit down and actually, everything is available on the web.
Yes.
You really don't, I mean,
and
people,
certainly available
they don't understand
on
that a seizure and epilepsy goes, you know, hand in hand, and you just have to Google these things. Give us your website one more time since you took the time to come on our show.
EFOF.org.
And once again, another fantastic
thank you
episode
so much.
Of Viewpoint with Friends, Sita and Friends. Thank you so much, Erica McKinney. Thank you so much, Mona Sheikh, and we will see you next week.
1 minute. You know, Pastor Paul, I just want to say, you know, this is where, when we talk about sitting down with your children around a kitchen table, these are the things that people need to talk about.
Right.
You know, I heard a show called On Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We talked about epilepsy. We talked about diversity. Whatever it is, people need to sit down and talk about.
Let's talk about it.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place. We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place.